When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made-safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
Missions to Mars, driverless cars, AI chatbots, feels like we're already living in the future. Well, Robinhood is built for the future of trading. Robinhood's intuitive design makes trading seamless. Spot opportunities and take control of your trades with tools like screeners, simulated returns, and strategy builder. On Robinhood, traders have access to hundreds of popular stocks and ETFs 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. So you can keep up with today's fast-paced markets. You can now even trade stocks and crypto all in one place with the new desktop platform, Robinhood Legend. The future of trading is fast, powerful, and precise. Experience it now on Robinhood. Investing is risky. Robinhood Financial LLC member SIPC is a registered broker-dealer. Trading during extended hours involves additional risks. Cryptocurrency services are offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC, NMLS ID 1702840. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at my bookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny-come-latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, mybookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. You name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at MyBookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code ZABE. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag.
I'm pleased to reveal that the 2027 NFL Draft, that's a big thing, will be held right here in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., on the National Mall, and you get a little glimpse of it. I was just saying to Roger, I don't think there's ever been anything like that. That's a good idea. In fact, maybe we could use it for other things also. I have an idea. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be something that nobody else will ever be able to duplicate that, I don't suspect.
This is the Zabe Cast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Here we go. And there you have it. Donald Trump introducing Roger Goodell to announce the draft on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Who would have thought, after all those years of Trump railing on NFL owners and Kaepernick kneeling for the anthem, even yelling at NFL teams for passing on Shedeur Sanders. Now there is Trump on Monday up there at the podium with a very awkward-looking Democrat mayor, Muriel Bowser, who had to stand there next to Trump, the devil himself, Hitler himself reincarnated, and act nice because it'll be a big boon for the city. They're saying a million people will show up. I know I will not be one of them. I just went to this thing in Green Bay less than 2 weeks ago. But it'll be cool for the city, cool for fans that want to come in, and it's going to look cool as hell. Position where they've got the stage, the artist rendering of stage will be right there in front of the Capitol building. If you get good weather, which chances are you will late April, Cherry blossoms will be done by then, but you should have nice spring weather. Could be a bang-up draft. I'll watch it on TV because, you know, I want to see which players are going to go where. Could be the Arch Manning draft at that. Welcome aboard, everybody. It's the Zabecast. Yours truly, El Baldo here. And yes, just me today. More on that in a second. When we're talking about the draft, there's an interesting phenomenon I had not heard of called the loser's curse. And I'm going to let Eric DaCosta, the current GM of the Baltimore Ravens, who's really good at his job. I think he's played the draft as well as the Ravens in general and Ozzie Newsome before him. They've played the draft very well. Perfect? No. Not even close. Ask any Raven fan about the line of misses at wide receiver prior to the Zay Flowers hit, which I think is going to turn out to be pretty good, all things considered. Here was DaCosta talking about the so-called loser's curse. Take a listen.
For me, an important study called the loser's curse by Richard Thaler, who's an economist, and Cade Massey, who's a professor at Penn now. And the idea of it basically is that teams simply don't do any better drafting than anyone else. You're all going to be about the same, right? So the idea that you're going to trade up, and basically that the draft is inherently sort of a luck-driven process. Now, I don't believe that, but there is an element of luck involved. So if you think about that and if you accept that premise, then you're trading up for a player that you think is better than anyone else, mm-hmm. right? And you think that that team's going to draft him.
Right.
But most of the time, they're not going to draft that player. Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen over the years is that player is probably going to fall to you. And could he be selected? Yes. But there's no guarantees that that player is going to be better than the player that you end up getting.
Yeah.
So they call it the loser's curse because the team at the top, it's like, oh, he's got the first pick in the draft. Well, you know what? The player that they select, we've seen this many times. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantees that that player is going to be better than the player that gets selected at 25 or 30 mm-hmm. in the first round. Mm-hmm. And so all things being equal, I know I'm doing a lot of talking about this, but it's a passion of mine. All things being equal, right? The fact that no one really knows who's going to be better than anyone else, the only rational approach is to get more at-bats,
right.
is to pick more. And so what we've seen over the last 5 years, but especially this year, everyone seems to be drafting players, the same players. So it's like going to a restaurant with 20 of your best friends and there's 20 things on the menu, but all 20 of you are ordering one of the same three entrees, right? You're all getting the steak and you're all getting the pasta. Maybe a few guys are getting the crab cakes, but nobody's going after the vegetarian option right. and nobody's getting the lamb. Mm-hmm. Everybody's eating the same things. That's kind of what the draft has become in some ways. And I don't know if that's because of the incredible media coverage, all the so-called draft experts, right? All the people that are putting up mock drafts and consensus boards and things like that. But for me, the idea of having more picks means I have the chance of getting more players.
So there you go. Very fascinating. The loser's curse. I think part of the loser's curse is that the teams picking at the top, i.e. the losers, i.e. the Jets and the Browns and the like, they have more expectations and pressure on them to not fuck it up. And so that's worse than the teams that have made the playoffs. They're picking later in the first round. So the expectations are lower. And even if that player they pick in the 20s, say, doesn't turn out great right away, there's a lot of built-in excuses. Well, you know, picking in the 20s and, yeah, we still had a good year last year. And if you have a quarterback, you're almost starting, as I've said before. You're starting in the NFL at 8 wins. That's your start, and then it's just build up from there. Pretty much no Patrick Mahomes-led team, when he's healthy for most of the 17 games or close, is going to be a 6-win team. Now, I used to say that about Rodgers, and they put together a 6-10 year when he was healthy the whole time, and that was when McCarthy got fired. So it's possible, but in today's NFL, if you have one of the dozen elite quarterbacks, you kind of start at 8 wins, and you build up from there. So I think that's part of the, quote, loser's curse. But the crapshoot part of it is so true. And the notion of we're going to move up because we think this guy's going to be gone, you don't know. That's why you see clips more and more as teams are putting cameras in their war rooms of the coach and the GM and the scouts getting all excited when a team ahead of them passes on the player they want. To that team, they're sure this guy's way better than the other dudes. Oh, they didn't take him. Ha ha. And the ones that turn out in the team's favor, i.e. Justin Jefferson, falling behind bust Jalen Reagor of the Eagles, get passed around and retweeted and become lore. The ones in which the guy turned out to be a rubber chicken and was no good, nobody's seeing those because they're not sensational. Yeah, we waited for this guy, we got him, and we think we're great. No. He stinks. Now, the question I have, there's two things that have to be said in addition to what DaCosta points out here. One is, how many picks do you want? How many at-bats do you want per draft? I say that 12 picks is the most you would want to have in a particular draft year. And I'm not even sure you want to go 12 picks every year if you could constantly trade down to get more at-bats. I think 12 guys, you've got to stash six. You could stash six on the practice squad, but then the other six, you may not want to keep them all. And teams don't like cutting draft picks anymore. When I was a teenager and certainly, 30 years ago, teams cut draft picks before they got out of camp all the time. Fifth rounder, he gone. Sixth rounder, he gone. Sometimes a second rounder, he gone. Now teams feel like, well, we can't be wrong about this guy. We've made an investment. Let's hang on to him. When in reality, sometimes you just say, you know what? Screw it. This guy is a clown. We really messed up. I know that Fred Davis, old alarm clock Freddy for the Redskins, should have been one of those early cuts. Yes, he was a very pedigreed college player. Won the Mackey Award for tight ends at USC. Big, strong guy. You're like, how can this guy miss? Well, second day of camp, he sleeps in and misses the start of camp. And you're like, but the team put you up in a hotel just so you can make sure to make it to camp. How did that happen? So we roasted Freddie on that. And then he gets embroiled in this sexual assault lawsuit at a club downtown called Zanzibar. Never forget that name, Zanzibar. And he decides he's going to represent himself. Fred Davis, Esquire. And of course, it goes very poorly. And the court testimony of the defense from tight end Fred Davis was comical, if not outright embarrassing. And he turned out to be a total and utter stiff. So you have to identify, if you're going to draft a lot of players, get more at-bats, as DaCosta points out. If you have a lot of picks you have to put somewhere on your roster, you better be really good at identifying by the time you're through with August who can play and who can't play. And I don't know if that's so easy. I don't know if, I think you want to see a little bit more of guys once the season begins. But I love the concept. It's more of a crapshoot than anyone in the biz wants to admit. And the only way to get really good at it is by more at-bats, which is a mixed metaphor. It's baseball, but whatever. So the draft coming to D.C., it looks spectacular. There'll be a ton of people, be a huge success. The NFL has turned this thing into the most unbelievable marketing behemoth I've ever seen. And people will go. And they won't know why they're going. Hey, you want to go to the draft? Yeah, let's go to the draft. There's going to be a lot of people there. Really? Great. The fact there's going to be a lot of people is an attraction. It's not a turnoff. People want to be part of big events, even though the big event is known, is known to be basically a nothing burger. You can't see anything, can't really hear anything, and it's boring. They're writing names of players off a list, and after the first day, and you don't even get live bodies to look at coming on stage to bro-hug the commish, except for maybe the first two-thirds of the first night. And yet they're going to get a million people. God bless the NFL. They have really turned a nothing event into a monster. So I'm not going. It's people. It's parking problems. It's a lot of standing around. It looked good. I'm not going. I'm watching on TV. Question. On the heels of people asking me, have you been to Churchill Downs for the Derby? And I said, yes, but I don't need to go back again. What is on your one-and-done list of sports events or maybe sports venues where you really wanted to go, and now that you've been, you can say, yep, don't need to go back? For me, the draft is one of them. I also went to a World Series game thanks to my good friend and former radio colleague, Glenn Eunice, who you've heard here on the podcast. And Glenn was super nice to give me the ticket. Very expensive. We had a good time, even though that's lost that game at home. Every home team lost in that best of seven against the Astros. But we were in seats that were not only over one of the overhangs, but also where the nets were. And it felt like we weren't really connected to the game. The other thing about the World Series is it's usually cold. And if you're in a northern tier city, it could be really effing cold. And if you're rooting for your team intensely, I find you want to be fully connected to what the announcers are saying and the analysis of what's going on. And you got to be able to see where the pitches are going. In the ballpark to watch a baseball game, if you want to be fully involved, you got to know, is my pitcher hitting his usual marks with the strike zone or not? Is he getting squeezed by the ump or not? Who's warming up in the bullpen or not? You'll know none of that if you're at the ballpark. Oh, sure, you'll be there. And I know that if you've been rooting for your team all season long, diehard fan, I can't believe it, we're in the World Series, and you want to be in the park when the whole place erupts, there's a lot to be said for that. But as far as watching the game, it's tough. Ryder Cup is in the same boat. I wouldn't say it was a one and done for me. I've been to two, technically. Went to the one at Whistling Straits most recently in Wisconsin. That was great because I had a lot of friends and colleagues who were there, and we, of course, had press credentials that let us stand up top on the bleachers behind the first tee. So we got to watch Bryson DeChambeau drive the green on number one, the par four, on Sunday, which was unbelievable. But I wouldn't need to go back again because you can't. There's so few groups on the course at the Ryder Cup, and they sell 40, 50,000 tickets. You literally stand waiting on a hole for three or four holes ahead of you or behind you. You wait for groups to finish two or three holes before they even get to yours. And if it's alternate shot, you're seeing half the shots. It's not very good. Been in the Brickyard 400 for NASCAR. I don't really need to go to any race more than once in my life. I would love to go back to some places. Cameron Indoor, I've been more than one time. Amazing, I'd go back again. The Masters, obviously. A Stanley Cup final game. That I would love to do. I would love to someday see the running of the Bulls in Pamplona. And don't know if I'll ever get there for that. And no, I'm not going to drop acid like Hemingway and go run with the Bulls myself. What do you think, I'm crazy? But I will get some assets. Some good horizontal assets. Slow motion. Oh, I'd love to get the Bulls coming down around the corridor in 240 frames per second. Nice long, maybe 200, 400 millimeter focal length to get that good, glorious compression. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself, but you get the point. Let's take a quick break. On the other side, I'm giving away a prize. We'll see how it goes. First time ever here on the Zabecast, a prize could await you if you are truly a one percenter. I'll explain next. You're listening to the Zabecast. The drive to basketball championships, the grind of raising the cup in hockey. From the court to the ice, today's elite athletes know success depends on having the right team behind them. Same goes for protecting your family's financial future. Select Quote's licensed agents are your all-star team for finding customized, affordable life insurance that scores big on coverage and savings. Select Quote has nearly 40 years of experience helping 2 million customers find over $700 billion in coverage. Other brokers offer one-size-fits-all policies that might cost more and cover less. Select Quote's agents work for you to tailor the right policy in just 15 minutes. Worried about health conditions? Select Quote partners with carriers covering high blood pressure, diabetes, and even heart disease. No major health issues, get same-day coverage with no medical exam. Get the right life insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/Zabe. That's selectquote.com/Zabe today to get started. selectquote.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Select Quote, they shop, you save.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at my bookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules, you name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code Zabe, and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code Zabe to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag. We're back, solo ride here, and I thought I would try something this week and see how it goes. I came into a wonderful sort of sample pack of some of the best products and unique products that I have bought myself over the years that I said, oh my God, yes, I would love to have a couple other products from this company. Chris McLeod, thank you, Chris, works PR and other promotions for this company called Skosh, S-C-O-S-C-H-E. I think I'm saying that right. I've never heard it pronounced, but that's how it's spelled. Skosh. They are the number one mount brand in North America. I have had and purchased any number of various magnetic mounts for my cell phone on my dashboard or on my front windshield. None of them are as good as this I'm holding right here. The Magic Mount Pro 2 Window Dash Magnetic Phone Mount. Number one mount brand. $39.99 value, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but it's a nice prize. And here's how I'm going to give it away. I'm going to give it away to the first subscriber who emails me after hearing Friday's episode and answering four simple little quiz questions that I ask each that I'll ask of each of the four episodes this week. So I'll ask one question, very simple, about something that was talked about on Monday, and again on Tuesday, and again on Wednesday and Thursday. And then to show that you're a true one percenter, you'll go, okay, bing, 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 hit send on an email to zabe@yahoo.com, and the first one in will get the Skosh Magic Mount. I know it's not much, but it's something, so there you go. Speaking of feedback, Sean Conroy wrote the following. Steve, longtime listener going on 10-plus years and a true one percenter. Never emailed before and generally love the podcast. Perfect length, good mix, all that. But the Jag Talk podcast? Eh, I get it. Spence is your friend. But next time, give me a warning that you are going to do 30 minutes on the Jags so I can skip it completely. I got no issue doing a full cast on them. Just give everyone a heads up so they know ahead of time. All the best, Sean Conroy. Now, of course, my first instinct was to go, you fucking, fuck you, man. I don't need you, a listener. But then I calmed down and I wrote a response saying, okay, I get it. I defended myself saying it was more about this notion of, you know, Travis Hunter playing both ways in the pros, something we've really never had on a more than novelty basis. Well, that uncovered, as I had a nice exchange with Sean back and forth, a lot more to his story. Sean is a Browns fan who has been so fed up with the Browns, he has pretty much abandoned them, or so he says. We'll see. If they ever get good again, I would hope he would go running back. But he said the Deshaun Watson signing absolutely broke him as a Browns fan. But he also doesn't like the notion. He doesn't believe that Hunter will be a two-way player, is part of it. And so we got into a nice exchange, and I said, look, I only do things that are of interest to me. And that includes when I have my buddies on. If I'm interested, I'll talk to them and they'll reach out to them. And I was interested in, you know, how Travis Hunter was doing and, you know, being in Jacksonville and everything else. By the way, kids, very simple. Football, video games, fishing. I think he's going to fit in just fine in Jacksonville. But that said, I would gladly hop around to every NFL team, including the ones that I don't necessarily follow much or care for, because I can get interested with anyone who's passionate or knowledgeable about their team. I wouldn't mind. I think I tried this, or I talked about this once upon a time on a radio show, of assembling pretty much 32 superfans who would be the spokespeople for their teams. And would be unafraid to let it rip about this guy sucks, that guy's a moron. Whereas beat writers, A, they tend to be more boring and less passionate than fans. And they're also more cautious in just saying, here's what I think. But that was one little exchange I got this week. The other one came from a guy, Waylon, is what he signed this email to. And he said, or signed his email with, and he goes, Steez, I'm sorry, but I had to cancel my premium subscription. Oh, okay. Well, you know, as the saying goes, it's not an airport. Don't have to announce your departure, but okay. I thought I would support you no matter what your venture, but I have found my limit. Oh boy, what now? I can't take paying for something that supports Andy Pollin. I know he's not on Fridays for the premium, but it's the principle of him having a platform to spout more bullshit than I'm willing to listen to because there is too much of it out there already. Oh, boy. Old, good enough, steady, Eddie, unquestioning, Democrat-voting Andy. What's worse is when you put him on Tuesdays after you miss a Monday with him. He's clearly the worst guest you have. But your undying loyalty to him is too much for me. Listen, I know what Andy can and can't do, and I try to steer him onto things that are of most value. Andy is also a guy that I like and I've worked with for a long time, and he's a pro's pro, and we have good conversations. It's a pair of jeans that still feels comfortable to me, knowing full well We don't call him Hot Take Andy. We don't call him Line in the Sand Poland. I get it. Whalen goes on to say, there is other content out there to listen to that keeps my attention when your podcast is unlistenable with Andy. What? There's other podcasts? It has led me into multiple days in a row with that podcast over yours. Okay, that's understandable. I'm out here swinging away, competing for all the ears I can get. It doesn't help that you have repeatedly promised to, quote, make up things to the premium subscribers for missing Fridays and very rarely coming through. I've got this magic mount here. You could win this. I don't have an issue taking days off or missing a premium podcast every now and then. Oh, okay, so we're good then, because that's really all I do is every now and then Oh, wait a minute, I think he does have a problem. He says, but when you promise to make up for it and don't, ooh, it's a bad look. Should I stop promising? In my opinion as well, the quality of the pod overall has gone down. I get it, you work another job, have a family. Any other constructive criticism on how the quality of the pod has gone down? I get it, you work another job, have a family, travel back and forth, so you got a ton on your plate. I will miss Scott and Solly, but I cannot take paying for a subpar product. I wish you the best, and I hope to be back someday. Crap to you, Whalen. Well, Whalen, I'd love to have you back, but I don't know what to do. I feel like Will Ferrell in Step Brothers when he is being told to change his face. Yeah, I don't know what to do about that. I guess I could just try to, I don't know. I will take constructive criticism, and I know that this podcast could have more oomph and sizzle to it, but at what point do you say, okay, I've put enough into it for what the whole venture is? It got me also to thinking about, okay, so why do people listen? I am constantly blown away sometimes at the breadth and width and depth of differing types of people in this world, from all different backgrounds, different education levels, different jobs, different age ranges, that listen to this little podcast. Why? Why are you listening to me? I mean, I'm talking pilots and doctors and judges and lawyers and construction workers and mechanics and drifters and grifters and old people, young people, second generation. People say, oh, my wife or my girlfriend listens to you because I have your podcast on in the car and we're taking drives. And at first she was like, who is this asshole? Now she's like, ooh, another episode of Zabe. And I'm like, blown away. So I thought about it and tried not to get too egotistical, but I did come to some conclusions. If I'm doing my job, which I think I can do most days, then I'm finding things that you otherwise might miss. I'm asking better questions than perhaps most other people. If I'm doing my job, I am finding angles to stories that you may not have considered. If I'm doing my job, perhaps I'm offering a very prescient insight on sports that will someday certainly come true. And I can say, see, told you. Or I'm just slinging shitty takes that won't last through the weekend. Look, it's a hit or miss prospect. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm using my broadcast skills acquired through 33 years of doing this in front of microphones, all the way from Santa Barbara, California, to Chicago, Illinois, to Charlotte, North Carolina, Bristol, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Milwaukee, Wisconsin, L.A., and beyond, if I'm delivering something good to listen to every day that you look forward to seeing in your update feed, if I am constantly at least checking and rechecking myself to see that the overall quality of effort and the quality of thought and research and quality of production and my sound implementation does not fall into the mail it in category, if I'm doing that, I think I'm doing okay. But I can't please everybody. Part of me would like to make this podcast me only, and then I could do some batching of it because I've got stories that I've clipped and made notes on in my Evernote application, which is what I use to keep track of all this stuff. And It's great for loading sound and links and everything else. I have enough material that I'm like, ooh, I want to talk about that, that if it was just me, I could probably batch the whole week in a day or two and just be done with it. But then the podcast would lose its currency. And we would lose the friends and associates of Zabe that many people really like. And of course, everyone has their favorites. We're going to talk to Church this week because holy shit, he moved to Utah. Bought a beautiful big old house in southwest Utah. Taking the camper, taking Roxy, taking the dog. I think the dogs are going. Saying goodbye to Minnesota. That's going to be a banger episode when I talk to him this week. Because I've been sitting on this for a little while. I'm like, wow, the listeners are going to be like, holy shit, he did it. So I don't want to get rid of them. So it's a balancing act, I guess. You know, the coordination of guests is often tricky in both the quality of their opinions and energy and do they really want to be on or are they just doing it as a favor? And of course, I'm always fighting the technical connection quality because I want that to be as good as possible, if not better. But most importantly, none of my guests can hit all the shots that I can hit, opinion-wise. Some of them won't even take the shots, or they just don't feel like they want to be accountable for an opinion on something that is dicey if that goes sideways, so they just won't shoot the ball. And that's fine, by the way. That's why I'm here. The whole Barstool, Portnoy, fuck the Jews story, which you may or may not know about, is compelling to me. Dave Portnoy, Jewish, head of Barstool Sports, considered still a bit of a rogue sports media entity that caters to the young white dude bros, and some consider to be right-wing or offensive or who knows what you want to call it, but they're not widely embraced. Dave Portnoy, Barstool owns a bar down in Philadelphia. They own a number of bars around the country. This is one of them. And when somebody orders bottle service at a bar, there's usually a light-up marquee with movable letters like you have at the movie theater, and you can move and make a message. Happy birthday, Jenna. Or go slam Kyle. Well, this particular person that ordered bottle service had the waitress spell out, fuck the Jews. And people, of course, took ample cell phone footage of it. Portnoy went nuts, and understandably so. I don't blame him. Threatened to ruin the lives of the kids that were behind it. Already got a couple of the waitresses fired, which I wholeheartedly agree with, and the manager. Unless, only if the manager did not know. Like, you, in civil society, you can't do that. And inconceivably, I've seen responses to this story where people are like, what? You can't say that? Oh, the poor Jews, they're, you know, they only run everything and they only this and that. And I'm like, are you hearing yourself talk? This is where it starts. You cannot lump people into a group and say, fuck them. Fuck the Jews? You mean like the Jewish rabbi who works at the soup kitchen in Brooklyn that feeds the homeless? Fuck him too? Really? Why? Because he has a different religion? Yeah, man, because of Palestine. Yeah. This is how you get at Coachella, a band putting up their fuck Israel. Unbelievable. But this is now the countercurrent with the younger generation. What's interesting to me, and so I bet many of you wondered, I can't believe you didn't ask Andy about that. Well, I know what Andy's take would have been. It would have been a milquetoast condemnation. It would have not been fire and brimstone. And he probably would have felt obligated to kind of say, well, you know, Barstool, I'm not really into Barstool. And but yeah, no, that's bad. Again, it's, I know what Andy would have been comfortable talking about and what he would have politely, mostly passed on. But maybe I'll ask him next week. I don't know. But I'm not afraid to say that that's outrageous. And I don't blame Portnoy for going off. He apparently said as a compromise to not trying to ruin the lives of these young college students that he was going to send them to Auschwitz for a tour of the concentration camps, I guess on Barstool's dime, as a way to help educate them. Others have said, not sure that's going to work either. And they're kids. The kids do dumb things. They get caught up in the moment. Yeah, I know. But consequences are always the best teacher. I don't believe their lives would have been ruined. It would have been disrupted for sure. Could have been kicked out of Temple, although I think they're Temple students. Knowing the way universities are now, that's where most of the anti-Semitic hate is coming from, the college campuses. But what's weird to me is that Portnoy, for the longest time, has kind of said, I'm not political, I'm not political, I'm not political. He did sit down with Trump during the election. I forget if it was the Biden election or the one against Kamala. That didn't sit well with a lot of people, including some inside of Barstool, who are like, we shouldn't be doing this at all. He's always said, I'm not political. But one would think at this point, old El Prez might get, as they say, radicalized to not necessarily become a Brooks Brothers suit-wearing Republican, but maybe to be definitely not what they are spouting over there. Also, on things many people who are my guest probably don't want to touch, but I'm comfortable talking about it, and I will stand and I will be accountable for it. My friend Timmy B, the pilot, weighed in on the spate of recent airplane incidents, including, I think it was on a Friday, it might have been a Sunday. It was the final report, well, not a report, but it was a story in the New York Times about what happened with the helicopter that crashed into the commuter jet and killed 67 people, families, children, bunch of ice skaters, ice skating families. Horrible situation with a young female pilot who just so happened to be part of the Biden administration sort of cabinet, not cabinet, but she had some role within the Biden administration. And she also just happened to be lesbian. Doesn't matter to some. It does matter in a positive way to others who are like, yes, we want that representation. She was actually flying her third so-called check ride to try to, you know, get further qualified and certified to fly. And so she was the one flying the helicopter. However, there was a instructor on board who told her to turn left twice. And she either didn't hear, didn't understand, or ignored the commands, and the result was fatal. Bad. And of course, people then quickly said, well, there you go. She didn't want to listen to a man telling her where to go. So she's like, nope, I'm not going to let you mansplain this. Boom, 67 dead. Others chalking it up to, yep, another DEI disaster. Look, there are bad pilots, good pilots, in-between pilots of all stripes. I'm sure there are excellent female pilots in our military. It's apparent that she was not one of them. And it's also apparent that the instructor probably should have been more forceful. Because what Tim explained was, basically, you know, hey, the instructor is supposed to be very firm. They're supposed to let the pilot who's training get really close to failure, but not too close that it puts anyone in imminent danger. So if you know they're headed towards something bad, you kind of let it unfold. You watch it, like a pot that's about to boil, and then you turn off the heat before anyone dies. Did the instructor wait too long on that? Was he not forceful enough? Was it because the young woman, technically outranked the instructor? Was he hesitant to be more forceful? Was he hesitant to actually take the yoke and fly the copter himself? That's uncertain. Because you'll never really know. The whole notion of pilots deferring to their superiors is a thing in aviation, I've learned. And that includes commercial aviation, and that includes men with other men. You know, I'm a big fan of the airline disaster series on, is it Smithsonian Channel? What is it technically called? Whatever it is. I remember seeing once a story of a plane that crashed in a suburb, what was the plane that crashed? I think it was a 727 that crashed outside of some neighborhood, I think in Portland, Oregon, into the trees, into the neighborhood, just went down. Some people survived, but not many. Houses got torn up, trees got torn up. And the whole episode explained what happened was the guy that they used to fly with three pilots in the cockpit. And even now with all the automation, you don't need more than one. I mean, you got a second one just for a second set of eyes, making sure everything's good, making sure that the first pilot is not suicidal and decides to commit suicide with a bunch of strangers who didn't sign up for it. That too has happened. And in case the pilot gets sick, has bad fish, like in the movie Airplane, you got two. But that's all you need, really. But back in the day, these old 727s needed a guy who was the flight engineer. And he sat behind the two pilots, sideways, looking at a bunch of knobs and dials and other stuff. And his job was to, this sounds crazy, to calculate how much fuel they had left on board. And because of a series of gull rounds on this particular crash, the fuel guy, the engineer, saw that they were running out of fuel. And he was sort of hesitant to bring it up forcefully enough to the pilot and say, "We are going to run out of fuel and die." He didn't go that hard because of cockpit command scenarios. So it's awful. I don't, you know, even if you were to say, well, we're going to ban all women from flying, which some misogynists would, I'm sure, love, I don't think that's going to solve anything, per se. You just have to be constantly vigilant of, A, are we actually promoting the best men and women to pilot status, or are we trying to fill quotas? Oh, well, it'd be great if we had a woman. It'd be great if we had a gay woman. Great if we had a Chinese woman, or not an Asian woman, or a pick all the rainbow colors you want. You should pick the best pilots. You should really try to put them in a brown paper bag in terms of candidates and pick the ones who score the best on the tests. That's what you should do. Also, my guy Timmy B said that corridor with the helicopters and National Airport continues to be a nightmare. There was a Black Hawk that was circling the Pentagon. That had circled like three or four times because he was trying to land and air traffic control didn't know what to do. And they're like, "What are you doing? Where are you going? Blah, blah, blah." And that had nothing to do with DEI or women. Tragic situation for sure. Oh, and then there was the video of the pilot of the small Cessna aircraft that landed at Riviera Country Club, where all of a sudden, and this was a great, great piece of video somebody caught on their cell phone, planes coming down, engine stalled. It's like a glider and it's going back and forth. It's down low to the ground. It's coming right at the person with the phone who does not flinch or run away. Just kind of backs up, keeps the shot framed. Then the pilot somehow gets enough control and touches it down on a pretty uneven little humpty hump of the golf course and was able to hop out and walk away. Everyone captioned it on Twitter as plane crash lands at Riviera Country Club. And I'm like, you mean lands, right? That there was no crash. Sure, the engine went out, but he landed it. And that's a pilot who kept his wits about him and had command of his craft. One more thing, and then we'll wrap it up here. And I know this is not sports, but then again, this is why I'm running solo today. These are all things that are interesting to me. Headline, CEOs keep stepping down and nobody wants to replace them. Ooh, me. I've seen how much CEOs make. I've seen the private jets they fly on. Ooh, pick me. So Wall Street Journal story. They say whatever the reason, the overall numbers are striking. A tally of 373 public company CEOs left last year, which was a 24% jump over 2023. The executives, the recruiters, and the coaches that were interviewed for the story said, quote, this is not a pandemic phenomenon anymore. Something else is going on. The story says layoffs take their toll on leaders as well. It's not just the people who are getting the pink slips. I mean, nobody likes to be the villain. DEI is another one. A lot of executives tell the paper that they feel like they can't please anyone. They're always doing too much or too little, depending on whom you ask. And our culture, they write, has become a little less work-obsessed in recent years. A little less. That can bleed into the C-suite as well. Blake Irving, the former GoDaddy chief executive, asked if he's ever interested in getting back in the game, leading another company. And he was basically like, are you kidding me? I'm talking to you on my balcony in Mexico right now. Must be nice, asshole. I mean, nice guy. He had just gotten off a board call. He says he spends about three quarters of his time in Mexico, sits on a bunch of public company boards, zooms into the meetings, and then says, well, that's enough for me. I gotta go. And he says more executives are making the same calculations now. Well, of course, once they've made their millions, they're set. Why would you get back into the game? Oh, because you'd want more money? Okay. Which also brings us to the story out of Wisconsin about the Kohl's department store CEO who was fired last week. Ashley Buchanan is his name. He looks like an Ashley, big floofy hair, good-looking guy, looks like a CEO. Apparently was a hotshot executive talent. He had turned around Michael's craft stores and then sold them off to private equity and did very well. He got plucked by Kohl's, which has its own challenges. Every time I go into a Kohl's store, I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe they're still open. In the day and age of the internet, how can they afford to have huge physical stores and all this merchandise they've got to account for and still make money? So he was the CEO of Kohl's for a very brief period of time, but then got fired. You know why? Undisclosed conflicts of interest related to vendor transactions. The individual vendor was identified as one Chandra Holt, a swishy-looking middle-aged woman. Swishy, is that a compliment? A sashaying, lovely-looking woman, middle-aged titan of industry herself, Chandra Holt, a member of the Boston Consulting Group, a team that the CEO of Kohl's urged his company to engage a multi-million-dollar consulting agreement with very favorable terms to the consultant. Buchanan did not disclose his connection with Holt as that they were lovers. This violated Kohl's code of ethics, and he was fired. Hotshot making $20 million a year, throws it all away for pussy. It's undefeated. It's unreal. At least the whole thing didn't go down, I don't think, maybe it did, as awkwardly as the Michael Scott from The Office deposition with Jan.
Did Ms. Levinson ever say why she thought she was being fired?
She thought it had to do with the twins. That's what I call them.
Can you be more specific? Who are the twins?
To be delicate, they hang off Milady's chest.
What about your romantic relationship with Ms. Levinson? Could that have played a part in her termination?
Well, if it did, then the company is breaking its own rules.
Interesting. How so?
Because before we started dating, we disclosed our relationship to HR. And I have the proof right here.
The company has just a few clarifying questions, Mr. Scott, if that's okay with you.
I will allow it.
We'd like to enter into the record a page from Michael Scott's personal journal. Just got back from Jamaica. Tan almost everywhere. Jan almost everywhere. Hee-hee. Oh, diary, what a week. I had sex with my boss. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. Jan was very specific that this is not going anywhere, that it was a one-time mistake. But we had sex 6 times, so you tell me. I am definitely feeling very eerie.
Irie,
sorry. More tomorrow. XOXO. Michael. It would appear that neither you nor Ms. Levinson considered you had a relationship in any sense of the word. Is that correct?
We're going to need to see a copy of that entire journal before we proceed.
I don't think anyone in this room has a right to read my diary.
It's basic discovery. We have the right to review it.
Okay, let's make 10 copies of this diary.
Could you make it 11?
Toby, can you make it 11? Michael Scott's worst nightmare. The genius of The Office and the writers of that show, prior to when it all kind of fell apart, when Michael left and they rolled through a bunch of, you know, interim regional managers, is that The Office was always right there on the edge of utterly absurd, hilarious, and cringe, but also kind of plausible, at least if you bend your disbelief a tiny bit. All right, that's it for me today. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. The algorithm sees human beings entering a, hey, this was great, 5 stars, and then they help promote the podcast. And, you know, we're all slaves to the algorithm now. There's no way around it. So if you have a moment to do that, I most appreciate it. If you would like to get this podcast commercial free, become a subscriber. Go to zabe.com/premium, and you'll not only get no ads, you'll also get Fridays with Scott and Sally, the OG members of the first team on Fox. And if you want to buy it for a year, you get $5 off. You get 12 months for the price of 11. Otherwise, go month to month and cancel any time, like my guy Whalen, who just feels like the quality of this effort is going down and didn't want to tell me why or how I could shore it up. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time. He makes his living off of the people's taxes. By the
soup, whoa, she slipped away. Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here,
reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At MyBookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at MyBookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny-come-latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules, you name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code ZABE, and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag.